You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Fitzdares, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by Thoroughbred Racing Commentaries Global Rankings. Hello, welcome to the show. Thank you for listening again. It is Tuesday, July the 20th, and as we discussed yesterday and last Monday, the programme The Dark Side of Horse Racing, part of BBC's Panorama strand, was broadcast last night on BBC One. It showed covert video footage from one of the largest abattoirs in the United Kingdom, F. Drury & Son, near Carn in Wiltshire, formerly known as Potters. Three of those horses were identifiable as having been trained by Gordon Elliott, the trainer who is currently serving a suspension for that infamous picture that appeared earlier in the year. And that was the hook that was used to set up the programme. Clearly, much of the focus in the aftermath has been on malpractice at the abattoir under the auspices of a food standards agency vet. But questions were still raised as to how and why horses trained in Ireland, where there are many perfectly serviceable and humane abattoirs, ended up in one in England, where clearly best practice was not being followed. In addition, it was alleged that one horse had had a microchip replaced to be mistaken for another so that it could pass safely into the food chain. Later in the programme, I'll be talking to Rolly Owers, the chief executive of World Horse Welfare, to Des Layden, the chairman of the Veterinary Advisory Committee of the European Thoroughbred Breeders Association, an expert in transporting horses and also one of the pioneers behind the Weatherby's e-passport, and to trainer Lucinda Russell for her perspective on the duty of trainers and owners to their horses after their racing careers have finished. But first of all, Lee Mottershead, senior writer from the Racing Post. Lee, lots to consider here. First, what should the sports reaction be to last night's programme?
I think it would be very strange and remiss indeed, Nick, if racing wasn't concerned. I think the BHA's long statement that was published after the programme indicates that it is concerned. Horse Racing Ireland should be concerned. All racing authorities in Britain and Ireland should be concerned, as should all people involved in horse racing. Yes, the programme was certainly not perfect in terms of presenting the case it wanted to make. It had lots of little factual errors, small things like showing pictures of the Cheltenham Gold Cup winner's enclosure and purporting that to be the Grand National. A number of the horses it showed probably didn't appear to be racehorses when they were talking about racehorses. And there were wider questions you can ask about the programme, things like obviously Animal Aid, which was heavily referenced through the programme. It's an organisation that states it wants racing banned, and therefore it's not an objective witness in this, albeit it is thanks to Animal Aid that some appalling practices within the Drury & Sons abattoir have been shown. So we shouldn't be too critical about Animal Aid at all there. It referenced the Moorcroft Centre, the rehoming centre run by Mary Francis. I've been down to Moorcroft a few years ago, spoken to Mary Francis, and I think she would admit herself she's no fan of horse racing or racing people. And I know a number of trainers have had issues themselves with Moorcroft and some of its practices. So I think some of the witnesses you can question within the programme, but I think the facts within the programme, the images within the programme, are exceptionally concerning, exceptionally distressing. And for me in particular, I thought the sight of Vita de Rock being led into the killing room of an abattoir with orange numbers stamped on his back was exceptionally upsetting to see. And I think that probably summed up the programme in one image for me.
What was it, though, particularly about the practices at Drury and Son that was different?
Well, I think for a start, here's an abattoir that has already had its practices questioned and challenged in the past. I think we saw the experts, the veterinary experts, watching the footage, watching footage that much of which we didn't see because it was deemed too distressing for a television audience to watch. They pointed out things like animals being shot at long range, as in a, almost like a firing squad situation. They highlighted animals being aware of each other being killed. They pointed out that there were food standard agency vets monitoring all this, and why on earth were they not intervening? So I think the practices within the abattoir itself look exceptionally remiss, and they have serious questions to answer, as does the Food Standards Agency. But there is a danger that racing people, and I tried to preempt this in my column in the Racing Post, Nick, on Monday, that racing people will simply try and pass the buck and say that this should have been a program built around abattoirs and not horse racing, when there are quite clearly questions for horse racing that emerge from the program.
Well, Rolly Owers is the chief executive of World Horse Welfare and joins me now. Rolly, I'll talk about the specifics of the racing industry in a few moments' time, but on a general point as regards the welfare of all horses, what are your organisation going to do now to put pressure on the Food Standards Agency to close this abattoir down?
It's not so much about closing the abattoir down, it's making sure that the rules are followed. And actually the programme showed multiple failures where regulations, welfare in transport, welfare at slaughter, you know, to name but two, but also the great failure in the equine identification system and the horse passport system. So I think, you know, where you have regulation, you've got to enforce it. And that has been a key mantra for World Horse Welfare for many, many years. And indeed across the sector, we recognise that the equine ID system, which must underpin protecting equine welfare, is simply not fit for purpose at the moment.
And we're going to hear from Des Layden in a few moments' time talking about the Weatherby's e-passport, which should make a significant improvement in that regard.
Absolutely. We live in a digital world, and it's beyond the pale to say that you cannot have a digital equine ID system for thoroughbreds and non-thoroughbreds. And the fact that where the different systems speak to each other, because a lot of what you saw last night was the fact that the Irish system and the UK system don't talk to each other.
But how can a government agency allow an abattoir to exist in England whereby the killer is taking pot shots at a horse with a rifle at 10 foot? Beyond horrific, really.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely horrific. And it's completely unacceptable. And it's illegal. But equally, why are these animals, there's abattoirs in Kilkenny and County Kildare. If many of these horses are Irish, they should be being slaughtered humanely as close to home as possible.
And that was the big unanswered question, I thought. Why aren't they? What would be the incentive? Is it going to be a financial incentive?
Inevitably so. And there are a number of reasons, many sort of fairly murky. And when you get into the dealer world, you do get into a fairly murky world. But I think the fact that the systems do not talk to each other, that means when those horses arrive at Potters, they are looking at the paper passport and the microchip. They aren't able to check the Irish digital system.
Okay, so what does racing now have to do? What is racing's responsibility off the back of what you saw last night?
Well, clearly, as I said, it's made for very uncomfortable viewing for the authorities, for governments, but also for racing. And I think it would be an error just to say, whilst the majority of issues seem to be originating in Ireland, I think there is absolutely something that the whole of the racing sector has got to sit up and take notice of. Because the fact is, we have a duty of care to the horses that we love, and the thoroughbred industry does love its horses. But there was many horses that we saw last night where that duty of care was failed. And there are many people involved in that duty of care. It's not just the owner, but it is, of course, the owner. It is the vets that are involved. It is the trainers that are involved. It is the transport companies that are involved. So I think it is a chance to say, yes, we had great progress in the publication of the Horse Welfare Strategy. DEFRA have launched their Animal Welfare Action Plan, which has a reference to sport horses as well. So now we need to take that strategy and put it into practical, implementable policies that the whole sector can get around to make sure that duty of care failure, like we saw last night, cannot happen again.
Did the programme makers reach out to you at all?
The programme makers didn't know. They didn't approach World Horse Welfare. I know they didn't approach the British Equine Veterinary Association. So it was really interesting to see who they did approach in making the programme.
Rolly Owens there, the chief executive of World Horse Welfare. Lee Mottershead rejoins me, senior writer from the Racing Post. Lee, we're all agreed, absolutely appalling scenes from the abattoir, and the FSA need to do something about it. Let's dig down into the significance for horse racing specifically, though, now, and pick up on one or two of Rowley's points. He talked about digitising horses' identities to start with, and one of the most shocking episodes from last night was the allegation made by Panorama that one of the horses in the abattoir had had a microchip inserted to make out that he was another horse in order to pass into the food chain.
Absolutely. So the horse in question was Tammy's Hill, a horse who'd be well known to listeners of the podcast, a Cheltenham Festival winner, won the 2014 Fox Hunters at the festival for trainer Liam Lennon and owner Pat Smyth. The programme highlighted that the horse had lost his life after the 2015 Irish Grand National, and asked the question, how come 5 years later the microchip that had been within that horse's neck ended up in the neck of another horse that was about to be slaughtered? And the allegation that was made was that this would enable a horse who otherwise would not be allowed to enter the food chain due to medication that had gone into that horse's system, getting into the abattoir and therefore also the food chain. The owners of the horse claim to have no knowledge of why that happened, and again, questions have to be asked as to how it happened and how that horse ended up there, and how Tammy's Hill's microchip ended up inside another horse.
Replacement of a microchip was the first thing that I personally found surprising, though perhaps I shouldn't have done. The second thing was the apparently systematic shipping of horses from Ireland to a slaughterhouse in England to be killed. For all manner of reasons, that seems quite strange.
It seems quite strange. It seems exceptionally unfortunate. And in many instances, it seems extremely cruel as well. It sort of was tied, Nick, to a stat that was given in the programme where Dara McIntyre, the presenter, someone who's got a wide and exceptionally good body of past work as an investigative journalist, he reported that the vast majority of horses being slaughtered in Britain and Ireland come from Irish owners and trainers. The overall figure is staggering. From the start of 2019 to the end of 2020 alone, 4,000 racehorses were slaughtered in the UK and Irish abattoirs, which would work out at about 2,000 horses a year. He's saying most of those horses are Irish, and a number of them end up in British abattoirs.
Okay, what disturbed you particularly?
I think the fact that what we saw here were horses who, one would imagine, we're never in a fit state to make that sort of journey. Horses who plainly had injuries, who were lame, who were not going to be rehomed. And I found it disturbing that whoever was responsible for those horses at that time had deemed the kindest, fairest thing to do for those horses was not to euthanize them at home on safe premises where they would meet a dignified and hopefully stress-free end, but to send them on a long journey to an abattoir, whether from one part of Britain to another or from Ireland to Britain or within Ireland or within Britain. I found that disturbing, that people would consider that to be an acceptable course of action.
What the programme never managed to tell us was who the third party was that was taking horses from, I presume not just Gordon Elliott, but a number of other people in Ireland, to a yard where they would then try and rehome them, and if they didn't rehome them, euthanise them because they weren't suitable for retraining or rehoming. Nobody's got any issue with that. The question we need to know, who is that third party, and why did that third party then appear to have some sort of a deal with an abattoir in England to have them euthanized?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Nick. I mean, that is certainly one of the questions. Gordon Elliott stressed in the programme, claimed the programme, that neither he nor the owners of the two horses, High Expectations and Kiss Me Cafe, who were passed on to the dealer, received any money for those horses. But I think it does beg the question, given the importance of aftercare now. It's always been important, but now it's a big issue. We're talking about it now. The BHA, through the Horse Welfare Board, British Racing is really moving forward on that. It set out a strategy report. It has good ideas. Similar moves are being made in Irish horse racing, given the importance of aftercare. And it's something that we know most trainers take very seriously indeed, and perhaps Gordon Elliott does exactly the same thing. This might be just one-offs that don't reflect his wider approach. But given the importance of aftercare, and given the size and scale and financial clout of a yard like Gordon Elliott's, shouldn't the job of finding a home for a horse, or indeed euthanizing a horse, shouldn't that be all done within the operation? Should that negation of responsibility to a third party, to a dealer, whatever a dealer means in these circumstances, that for me doesn't really sit right, Nick.
But I think, Lee, it's fair to say that most, if not all, yards would have people that they look to help them rehome horses for them, that have a network of contacts in the equestrian world or the hunting world or outside, who would be suitable places for horses to be rehomed and ridden and retrained. And there are obviously some instances which everybody accepts where that's not possible, and those horses then have to be put down. But you're then taking that person's word for it, that the end for all those horses is a good one, whether it's in life or in death.
Nick, you're right. It is a huge job. But I would argue that in a huge yard, it should be perfectly well able to do it within the operation. A huge yard should have a member of staff, a team that is responsible for finding homes for horses after they finish racing. And the problem with going with a dealer, even if it's an inverted commas trusted dealer, because we've seen that this particular dealer shouldn't have been trusted seemingly with these horses, the problem with doing that is it's just another example of passing on the responsibility to somebody else. This whole subject of aftercare, Nick, what this has highlighted is that traceability question of the owner maybe says to the trainer, or the trainer offers for the owner to take on responsibility for finding a horse. The trainer or the owner then send that horse on to a new home, to a rider. That rider then finds out they can't look after the horse. They send it on to somebody else. It's a chain of passing on responsibility for that horse. And the idea of using a dealer is it's just an extra chain, if you like, in that link, that flowing link of responsibility.
Well, trainer Lucinda Russell was watching last night's programme. She posted on Facebook last night, and it was your post on Facebook, Lucinda, that resonated with me more than anything else I read on social media. Just broadly, give me your impressions of the Panorama programme.
The post was actually written before I'd watched it, and I think having watched the Panorama programme, the thing that really hits me overall was that the abattoir was incorrect, that the practices that it had were incorrect. And anyone that uses that abattoir, whether it's for racehorses or for pleasure horses or anything, should be ashamed and should not use that abattoir. And I think that there were things that were pointed out in the programme. I mean, the horse that had a microchip that belonged to a different horse, I mean, that's just criminal. It is a criminal matter. And I think that for Panorama to highlight the bad practices in an abattoir is good, as long as that's then acted on by regulators.
Yeah. In your view, as a trainer, where do responsibilities lie as far as aftercare is concerned?
Well, I'm very self-opinionated and everything's about me. I take very huge responsibility in every horse that enters my yard, and I continue that on when they're going to leave the yard. I think that the owners have a responsibility, but I take the responsibility ourselves. So if we rehome a horse, if it's on permanent loan, or even if it's sold, and that person then can't cope with the horse or their situations change, we then take it back, and it's our responsibility to find it another home. Now, we do that because we're in the lucky position that we can do it. We've got enough money, we've got enough space, we've got enough stables that we can take horses back, and we've got the time and infrastructure to find them another home. So I think that, I mean, whether every trainer has that responsibility, but definitely every owner that owns a horse has to have that responsibility, and that's whether it's a racehorse or a pleasure horse.
The one overriding feature of the programme that struck me was the extent to which you can trust somebody once you give them a horse. And you'd like to think you could trust everyone to do the right thing, but it seemed to me that you couldn't, because you can give away a horse in good faith, you can sell a horse in good faith, and there's nothing wrong with selling a horse. Most horses are sold at some point in their careers, but you simply don't know what's going to happen.
You're absolutely right. Before I trained, I used to buy and sell horses. I was a dealer, and that's one of the things that we always were very, very careful to make sure that they do go to the right home. But you're right, it's the ones that get sold further on down the line. We've had it. We had a horse called Safari Adventures that was sold and ended up, thank goodness, with a girl that looked after him and rescued him. He was in a terrible state, and she looked after him. So you're right. I think there's a couple of things that we have to do here. One is that we have to educate the horse owners how to look after racehorses, and I think the ROR do a good job of that, but we've got to keep on doing that, and especially now as the population become less rural and a lot of the people are growing up, you know, without knowledge, without a deep set knowledge of horse care and of animal care. So we've got to keep doing that education so that when the horses are rehomed, they're looked after in the correct way. But we've also got to put in place a structure that if horses, that we can catch the horses before they fall through the net.
And there's a sense I felt that the visceral reaction from people who thought this was an attack on racing was to sort of pass the buck. This is simply a program about bad practice in an abattoir. Do you think it is simply a program about bad practice in an abattoir?
I think it was a program about that, but I think that they used the racehorses to get everyone's attention. Now, racing is really lucky because we can lead the way, and I think in this situation we should be leading the way. So come on, let's get together and let's do something proactive about it, and show that racing leads the way. We lead the way in so many other things, you know, in the welfare of horses and the veterinary aspect of horses. So why don't we now lead the way in the ex-racehorses, and rather than feeling beaten down, but let's make our sport the shining example. I mean, don't forget that that abattoir, there may have been racehorses, but there were a lot of other horses there as well: show jumpers, eventers, pleasure horses, fat cobs, ponies, and all of them were in the same place of disaster. So let's educate people and let's lead the way and be proactive about it and keep the headlines and say how much we're trying to do to help it.
Lucinda Russell there with some really interesting remarks on yesterday's programme. Lee Mottishead is still with me. Lee, just that image you mentioned earlier of Vita Du Rock, and just tying up these themes, his owners are absolutely devastated by what befell him. They gave the horse to a girl in the stable in good faith, and I guess if you'd asked them a month ago, well, where's Vita Du Rock, they'd have said, well, he's happily hacking away or doing a bit of hunter trials or something in Ireland.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case, Nick. I'm absolutely certain that they would have had no idea what fate had befallen their poor horse, and they're bound to have been enormously saddened. And again, this just highlights that question of traceability, and it highlights the conundrum, the problem that we've got here, in that ultimately, I suppose with a case like this, you could argue that the people who own that horse when that horse left racing have responsibility for the horse, but if they then sold that horse or given that horse to somebody else, that person also has responsibility. And if the two aren't communicating, what happens? I read one person saying on Twitter that they know of a leading owner who retains the passport of horses that they sell on or give on, so that they retain an element of control over that horse's next step. But I think in a wider sense, Nick, this just raises again how complicated this issue is. But because it is complicated, that isn't a reason for trying to just put it in the too difficult draw. And I'm encouraged that even before this programme came out, the BHA has been very active in doing things on this, in trying to make strides. And You know, they highlighted in the programme, Darren McIntyre spoke of around 7,000 horses leave British racing each year. He didn't really go on to say that most of them do go on to a very positive, different life, whether that is within a different form of equine sport, within breeding, or just as someone's hack or, in effect, pet going forward. There is still too many horses, though, that are meeting fates that they shouldn't meet. And for all that this was an exceptionally disturbing programme to watch, so it was in Australia when they had a similar documentary 2 years ago. They have tried to use that to start building things and start moving forward. I think we have to do the same thing. It's no good being angry about the BBC producing a documentary like this. We have to try and take what we can from it and make things better.
Well, it is Tuesday, and we normally go around the bloodstock world with our friends at Weatherby's. And a very important addition to horse racing from Weatherby's is about to arrive in the shape of the Weatherby's e-passport. We've spoken to Dr. Des Layden on this show before. Des is the chairman of the Veterinary Advisory Committee of the European Thoroughbred Breeders Association and has been instrumental in helping to develop this technology. Des, just tell me a little bit about it, first of all.
Well, it means that everything that you've had in your paper passport before is now available in a digitized form that you can access through your mobile phone, your laptop, or even with a smart card if you so wish. And that's hugely useful because it provides the ability to have reminders. For example, about the need for you to renew your vaccinations. And in the present context, of course, it's immensely valuable because it carries all of the information about the horse in one readily accessible format. So its breeding, its date of birth, its unique identification number, its record of its ownership and of its movements are all on this wonderful piece of digital technology that's been made very user-friendly by Weatherby's, and they need to be congratulated for bringing this to its current state of evolution so far in advance of anybody else in the world. This is a really, really wonderful technical development that we must all embrace.
Of course, when we spoke about this before, we spoke about it broadly in the context of Brexit and moving horses through Europe. What we're talking about now, is it in the context of protecting horses' identities in light of what we saw in the Panorama programme last night? Would an e-passport stop you being able to fraudulently claim that horse A was horse B when you were sending it to an abattoir, for example?
Yes, it is, because it's a secure platform. The difficulty with any form of paper is that it can always be counterfeit, as we saw last night, and so the e-passport removes that at a stroke.
What did you make of the suggestion or the allegation, which nobody seemed to dispute, that one horse had had a microchip or had attempted to have a microchip removed and another microchip implanted?
Yes, this has happened before and has been documented. Our own authorities in Ireland, because of their jealous preservation of the wonderful status of Irish beef, were very alert to this at the time of the horse meat scandal. So it has been previously documented, and I think it is now very much more difficult to do than it was in the past. I was a little surprised that the people are still able to do it, but I suppose we have to bear in mind that the essence of the programme, I believe, relates to the period 2019 and 2020, when, of course, there were an awful lot of other things going on in the world.
So you feel that an eye might have been taken off the ball that enabled malpractice to flourish?
It certainly would be very much more difficult, I think, than was portrayed last night. I thought there were a number of errors there of management and policing, which would be a rarity. They would not be the norm.
Yeah. So, from a transport perspective, then, so we dealt with the veterinary perspective. From a transport perspective, how difficult would it be to get horses over the Irish border now and then shipped to England to a slaughterhouse in the way that we saw last night?
I think it would be really quite difficult because inspection of the paperwork post-Brexit and with the new animal health laws, I think, would probably throw up falsification of a passport in a way that the program individual instance would be rare, Nick. I think the degree of scrutiny now is very significant.
That's
going to be much more significant after last night.
I mean, watching last night's programme, which aspect of it concerned you the most?
Oh, the absolute dereliction of duty of care, not only by the management of the premises in question, which I believe has been subject to scrutiny previously, but also by the Food Safety Authority. There was a total absence of pre-mortem inspection. If horses are compromised, they are not to be transported. And if the compromised horses are presented for slaughter, then there are legal penalties that should be imposed. The idea of somebody walking around a slaughterhouse waving a rifle absolutely horrified me. I thought the whole thing radiated a lack of policing and of management control over the operation in that premises. What wasn't clear to me last night was whether or not those horses were destined for the human food chain or were not, because they could have been destined for the pet food industry. I really wasn't quite clear whether or not the premises was operating as a knackery or as an approved premises, an abattoir that would allow horse meat to enter the human food chain. I thought it was unfortunate that it was portrayed so much as being a program about horse racing, when in reality it was a question about the slaughter horse industry.
But is there a responsibility on the part of horse racing to take the stories that we witnessed in the program seriously and to ensure that, to the best of their ability, that it doesn't happen?
Yes, and I think the e-passport is a very good and very timely intervention in this context. And I think, yes, of course, racing and breeding has to take this very seriously at every step. Just one thing I wanted to point out, though, Nick, although the focus of the programme was on horses being transported long distances from Ireland to that premises, bear in mind, too, that horses were probably transported long distance in the UK to that premises as well, because of the activity that it was carrying out and the laxity of its protocols. And I think there's a need for a general tightening up, and in particular in relation to pre-mortem inspection and to penalising those who are producing horses which are unfit to be transported to a slaughter premises. And of course, really, it comes down to individual responsibility. And it's a question of whether or not you microchip your horses out of the food chain in the first place, which means that you or the then owner of the animal are prepared to bear the costs of euthanasia and of disposal of the carcass.
And has the thoroughbred industry actually got the scope to be a world, to be a leader here?
It not only has the scope, it is the leader. There is more control over our horses and more control over their welfare and better health care of them than there is of horses in any other sector of horse production. And I think we do need to champion that, Nick. We can be forced into a situation all too often of being defensive about what we do. Actually, we provide a wonderful environment for wonderful animals. They get a standard of health care which far exceeds that of any other the livestock produced animal, and we must be very proud of that and make more capital of it.
My thanks to Dr. Des Layden, to trainer Lucinda Russell, and to Rowley Owers from World Horse Welfare, and particularly to one of my regular contributors, Lee Mottershead, the senior writer from The Racing Post. Lee Mottershead's tip today runs in the 6:45 at Nottingham, and it is Whitwell for the Easterbys and the flying Joanna Mason. More on her and the Yorkshire Racing Summer Festival tomorrow, when we'll also be giving you an extensive preview of all the weekend's delights, including the King George. But thank you to all my contributors in what's been a very important edition of the podcast. That was Tuesday, July the 20th. We will see you again tomorrow, I hope. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares. the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.